Welcome to WeAreTechnology.com's User-Friendly 2.0 with host Bill Sickens, Technology Architect.
And this is User-Friendly 2.0. Jeremy and Gretchen, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi there.
And this week we have one of the dreaded clip shows for the holiday.
Oh, no.
We're actually going to be looking back at some of our interviews this year. We've had some really good material. And some stuff that is really worth, I think, revisiting. And as we get into that, let's talk a little bit about this and kind of the background of where all of this came together. This has been our first year as version 2.0. And this has been a reboot from our original user-friendly 1.0, or just user-friendly show. And Gretchen, let's start with you, because I know that your first thing in life was not necessarily to get into radio.
You had to drag me kicking and screaming to be a part of this.
Now, let me ask you something. Have you enjoyed doing it?
Yeah, actually, I have. Yeah.
So, and Jeremy,
I used to read the news. We had it typed out.
Yes.
And I would read it.
Yes, I do remember that. And, and there are some things that you kind of go through and change and things that do work and things that don't work. But overall, I've had a lot of fun. Jeremy, what's your feeling on it?
Oh, this has been a whole lot more fun than when we first started in the tiny little cramped studio at the mall.
Yep. That was an interesting thing. Our first station that we were on, and what Jeremy's talking about, was literally a studio that was in a mall and one that wasn't terribly successful. So you had things going on, but there was no way to soundproof the room, for one thing. So that was always a challenge, you know,
and Jeremy wasn't even actually part of that.
No, I was just helping you guys out with your stuff, making sure you guys had all the things you needed for each show.
Right, right.
But, the screaming babies in the background, that guy with the harmonica.
The drill.
The hammer.
Yeah.
The hammer,
yeah.
And the power drill. I remember all of that. And it was just kind of, you worked around. And that one went out live, too. So there wasn't really a lot you could do. If something really weird happened, you didn't have the opportunity to edit like we do today. So, and I know that show, we started as a half hour, and originally we were just a technology show. And the pop culture idea came in when we went to an hour. And that was based on a conference that Apple does every year that combines the two very well. And we all thought it was something, and the audience seems to, that's very unique and gives a little bit of a wider perspective on life than just technology or just pop culture would. So
yeah.
It's been a lot of fun. So to everybody, we wish you very much a happy holiday. And we're going to have this episode for you. We're going to look back at some of our interviews in the past year, or maybe even a little bit before. Let us know what you think about everything and send us your questions for next year. Season 2 starts in January, one user friendly on Facebook, one user friendly on Twitter, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We can get your calls. Give us a call, 503-766-6264. Here we go. Welcome back to User-Friendly 2.0. We're going to go back here to the Emerald City Comic Con in just a moment and talk to some people from the floor. We've got two really kind of cool products that we figured out that we hadn't seen anywhere else. One of them is a backpack. Well, what's so amazing about a backpack? Well, these are really different. They're actually a modular backpack that you can assemble and put together, and we're going to talk to the inventor of that here in just a minute. And the second item is sword fighting. We all love to go out and do sword fighting, but this is a really safe way to do it. They've got a whole setup that was just absolutely incredible to be able to see. And we're going to be talking to the gentleman from that company here in just a moment as well. So with no further ado, let's go ahead and go into our first interview. Here we go.
So this is Jeremy Winkler with User Friendly, and we're live at ECC Comic-Con, Emerald City Comic-Con in Seattle. And we're talking with Morris, and we're looking at some Equilibrium bags. Can you give us an explanation of your really cool bag?
Sure. The easiest way to explain it's like Legos for bags. It's a modular bag system with every single piece usable by itself or together. So modular being just, pieces put together, but it's modular plus one. When it's plus one, meaning that every single piece of our bag system can be used independently or together. In different configurations.
That's really cool. Yeah, so, thanks. Like, I see, like, you've got like five or six different kinds of bags here.
Sure.
How did you get this idea?
I couldn't find a bag that I like. As simple as that, right? Like, usually that's how it stems off. Like, creativity goes like, I can't find something I like. I want to, and the next step is, I want to make it. So, I had the means to do so. And it just kind of serendipitous, and just everything fell into place, and we ended up making a bag. So
that's really cool. So you've got like a backpack that converts into a smaller backpack that converts into a smaller backpack, or the other way around, right?
Right. It consists of several pieces, right? The harness is the main piece that actually interfaces the container to the person's body. And that interface is actually size. What we ask people is, when was the last time you were sized for a backpack? Almost normally never, right?
Exactly.
Unless you actually hike or mountaineer, you're never sized for a backpack.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
I never actually thought about that. I just go and buy a backpack,
right,
adjust the shoulder straps, and that's as far as I've gone.
Right. And that's could go only so far, right? It's one size fits all usually is one size fits some. Not everybody,
right?
And having something that is actually fit to your torso makes a big difference on putting the weight in the proper points in the body so it doesn't feel heavy.
So. That is so awesome.
So how long have you been doing this?
Well, I designed the bag about 12 years ago. I got my patent about 8 years ago. And after getting the patent, I was able to go ahead and start making and producing the bags. Initially, when we started doing it, my wife and I were like, hey, like, let's go ahead and make the bags. But I was like, let's sell it already. And I'm like, no, it's not done. It's not perfect. And she came up with an answer. She goes like, when is it going to be perfect? I'm like, gosh darn it, you're right. It never will be perfect. So go ahead and sell it and continue on the development. Initially, it was my brainchild. But ever since we had customers and beta testers that actually joined into the fold and had the bags and tried the bags on, they were all like, hey, have you thought about this? Have you thought about putting this in there? And now it's like an open source thing where everybody has put their input on it, making an even better bag than what I envisioned initially.
Oh, that's cool.
That is completely amazing.
Thank you.
And I just like looking at all these fun things. So you have social media.
Yes, we do.
Cool. So if someone wanted to, we're going to post photos.
Yes.
On our media. So where would they contact you if they wanted to look at your bags?
Okay. Our website is equunit.com. That's equunit.com. We're also on Facebook as Equilibrium USG, USG for Urban Survival Gear. We're also on Twitter and, nobody even uses like, Vlogger or whatever it is.
Yeah,
like,
no.
So, anything that says Equilibrium USG, anything on any of the social medias, if you type in Equilibrium USG, we're probably in there somewhere or another. So
awesome. Cool. Well, this is.
I don't know. I think that one of those backpacks would be really, really cool. I could see where they would be really usable. And from the way they're designed, it looked like they were well worth the money. Something that you can abuse a little bit, which we all kind of do doing this stuff, and that would really just kind of hold up for you. Next up here, we've got a gentleman that works with a company that's put together a way to do sword fighting safely. And not just sword fighting, bows and arrows and shields and the whole bit. Kind of a live-action role-playing LARPing thing. And here we go back to the floor. Let's learn about our sword playing.
Live here at the Emerald City Comic Con, and I've just found something really cool. Can you introduce yourself?
My name is Sven Luger. I'm helping out at the Game Matrix booth.
Game Matrix. Okay, so we have a whole bunch of arrows and maces and shields and other things that I'm going to be playing with here. Tell us a little bit about what you got.
Our material is carbon fiber-based as your core, so it's not going to shatter like PVC. We use a high-grade ether foam, so that will compress. It'll soften a little bit over time, but it won't collapse like the fun noodles and the insulation stuff, so it'll last. The owner of the Game Matrix has been putting on for 15 years 7 to 12 boffer parties a week for 15 years, and his original equipment is still in play.
I mean, this all looks very safe and like something that would really last.
Yes, it does.
So it's a fun way to be able to get out. I know you called it couples therapy when we came up to
yes.
the booth.
But I mean, it is. I mean, my sweetheart and I, my Julia, may she rest in peace. She was when we first met, she was a fourth dan black belt in kendo,
wow.
iaido, and jujitsu, and kenjutsu, right? So she was a good sort of guy.
Right.
I had more experience, and I just never bothered to rank, but right. I competed with seventh dan and above, so she was a bit surprised. But,
no.
Whenever she had a bad day, it was, honey, I want to go out to the backyard and have a discussion.
All right, well, we'll put the website out on our social media and check you out. And anybody that's in the Seattle area, check out the Game Matrix. This looks absolutely incredible. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Well, you know, it makes me want to get out, and I love doing the tabletop role playing. This sounds like something that would be a lot of fun to be able to get out and get some exercise and still be able to do the cosplay, dress up. Really kind of an interesting system that we saw up there. Go ahead and check all of this out. We'll have it up on our social media, who these companies are, what they are, a way to get more information. One User Friendly on Facebook, One User Friendly on Twitter. This is User Friendly 2.0 on KPAM. We will be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Joining me today is a guest host, G. Charles. Welcome to the show.
I am here. You can just call me G.
Everybody I will just call you G. Does. I'll remember G. Yes. That's about all I remember here. So there you are. All right. Check us out on social media. One User Friendly on Facebook, One User Friendly on Twitter. That's how we get your questions. That's how we do our programming. And along those lines, joining us today is Jenny Glatz.
Hi.
Did I say it right?
You did.
Huzzah. All right. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're doing.
Yeah. So this is, I'm Jenny Glatz, and I'm from the Portland area here. I work for a company called Vanderhauen. We are a locally owned, women-owned staffing company, mostly working in the technology space, but also in engineering and accounting and finance.
So to go right to the question from our audience, how has the hiring process and the application process changed using technology? What's different from when you used to submit your resume versus how you do it today?
Yeah, there's been a lot of changes. I've been doing this for about 12 years now. And when I started, people were faxing their resumes to me and or mailing them. That doesn't happen anymore. I don't even know if we have a fax machine. So today, people are either emailing their resumes to me or they're submitting them online through an applicant tracking process. It can be through a website like Monster or Indeed or LinkedIn, or they could be applying directly on our website or on a company corporate website.
So these platforms, are they all tied together?
Some of them are, some of them aren't. It just kind of depends on the applicant tracking system that the company has. Ours actually does integrate with a lot of the websites out there so that those applications come right into our system and I can look at them there. The biggest problem is our technology hasn't really kept up with the times. So if you send me a PDF through a lot of those sites, they're not going to come through. They're going to look funny. They're going to, the formatting is going to look odd. So make sure that when you send in your resume through a site like that, that you're doing it in a Word doc. I know that seems old, but it's the way that's going to work the best.
Would a JPEG work?
JPEGs typically don't work either because applicant tracking systems, they do a thing called parsing, and it puts the information in the system where we can read it. And when you have a JPEG or a PDF or something like that, it doesn't parse it properly. So sometimes we'll lose your contact information or your name or, you know, information about your work history.
You know, interesting thing about applying, because I do apply a lot of jobs online. And it'll want me to put all the information about all the resumes and all that kind of, all the places I've worked and all that kind of stuff. Then it wants my resume and a Word doc too. Mm-hmm. Why the duplication?
Well, I think it's gotten a little better. The duplication has been decreased by quite a bit. And you can just turn in resumes now. But some of them, the older systems do require that. And it's a lot to do with the applicant tracking system again. And it not parsing properly. And so you'll have to put the information in for it to be in the system properly for that recruiter or HR person to actually look at it and see what's there.
Now, you and I talked about this a little earlier. I'm applying for a job online. How do I know for sure this is a legitimate job? And how secure is my information when I give it to you or when I send it online to you?
Yeah. So that's a very good question. Let's start with how secure it is. We tell people today, don't put your address on your resume. There's no reason anybody needs to know where you live. You can just put like city and state, or not even city and state at all, especially if you're applying for a job out of state. So if you live in Florida and you're applying for a job in Portland, you probably want to leave Florida off of there because you're probably not going to get a call. So we say, you know, leave all of your personal information off, especially anything like birthdays or social security numbers or anything like that. You don't want to put any of that in online. When you are filling out applications after you have received a job offer, that's when you're going to put that information in online, because you are actually working with a particular company at that point. The other part of your question was about...
Just how safe is it?
Oh, it's out there. It's public information. It's public knowledge. Anybody can go on and look at any resume that's posted online. So again, you want to keep your information to what you would allow people to see, anybody to be able to see.
So, and I'm going to ask this question too on the security perspective, because this is something I've noticed. Now, you and I met when I was working on one of these type of systems. So I was doing this process.
Yep.
And one thing that I've noticed is ever since then, I will daily get emails of some job somewhere. And it looks a lot like the spam emails that you get sometimes that, your bank account has been hijacked. So click on this link.
Right.
Are those things to ignore? And how do you know what's real and what's not?
Yeah. So one of the things that I do is, look at where it's coming from. Is it a legitimate site? Is it something that you recognize? Is it, a Monster or a Vanderhauen? Or is it some random website? If it's a random website, I'd probably just ignore it. I'd probably just delete it. But there's a lot of people out there that are recruiting for people that are passive. And what I mean by that is people that aren't looking for jobs. We're looking for those people that have skills and trying to see if they might be interested in hearing about a new job. So you're going to get emails from people like through LinkedIn asking if you are interested in a position. So, look at those, do a little research, make sure that these people are legit. The other thing is when you're looking at job postings, make sure that the spelling is right. Make sure that the grammar is proper. If not, it's a very good sign that that might not be a real job.
Okay. And how do I make myself stand out to you? You have a job advertised, 10,000 people are going to apply. How do I make myself stand out?
So for the best way to stand out for me is to have a good resume. And what I mean by good resume is, make sure that your formatting is correct. Make sure that you don't have too much on there. Make it easy and scannable, because your resume is not read. Nobody actually reads a resume anymore. We scan through it and find the things that we're looking for. And so if you have just paragraph after paragraph of everything you've ever done in your entire life, we probably won't get to the good stuff.
So if someone wants to apply, do you recommend then that they go directly to your own site? It's sounding like that for Vanderhauen. You would get more of a response?
Yeah, either go to our website or email directly to one of the recruiters. That's typically the best way.
And do you have any guidance on how to format a resume and that type of thing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I do that all day long with people. And basically, you want to make sure that your name and everything's at the top. If you are just out of college, you want to put your education at the next spot. If you've been out of college for a little while, you put that down at the bottom. Make sure that your work history is from the most recent and moving backwards. Just make sure that your dates are proper, that you have month and year on there. If you just have the years, a lot of times those get skipped.
Okay, that sounds interesting. And how does someone get a hold of you directly?
Yeah, so you can email me at Jenny, which is JENNI.glatz, GLATZ, @ vanderhauen.com. That's VanderHouen.
And tell us again what areas you recruit in.
Most of my focus is on technology. So software developers, project managers, technical writers, anything that has to do with technology, I'm working on it.
All right, sounds great. So if you're looking for a job, or even if you're thinking about changing positions and want to see what's out there, give it a try. We'll put that out on our social media. Jenna, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you, Bill.
This is User Friendly 2.0. We will be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Check us out on social media. One User Friendly on Facebook, One User Friendly on Twitter. Did you miss a show? Would you like to hear something again? Get our podcast here at theanswerportland.com. You can look back and find anything that we have done. And send your questions in userfriendlyshow.com. Joining us today is Sean Dodson from Subtown Events. Sean, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Now, We were talking a little bit before we started here about Stumptown SuperCon. Can you go ahead and tell us what that is and when it is and what people should expect?
Sure. Stumptown SuperCon is a costume-themed rolling dance party, a.k.a. a pub crawl. We start at Kell's Irish Pub on July 27th. We're actually going to be there about 2 o'clock. The event starts at 3 o'clock. And we have a rolling DJ podium. We go to a lot of great venues, restaurants, dance clubs. And there's a total of about 12 venues included in this event. And we're raising money for Planned Parenthood Columbia Willamette. It's costume themed and costumes are required. So any kind of a superhero or supervillain that you want to be, come out and have a fun time.
So a cosplay pub crawl, that sounds like that's the way I could get into some trouble. So I'm definitely going to come down to that. What gave you this idea to do a cosplay pub crawl?
Well, we've been doing costume-themed events since about 2011. Started out with a SantaCon. We do probably the largest SantaCon in Oregon, definitely, and one of the largest ones on the West Coast now, with about 5,000 people every year. Our first event actually was a superhero pub crawl, I think 2010 or 2011, and the gentleman who actually started this up to begin with was doing this just for the fun of comics. He's been a comic book fan for his whole life, and this is actually kind of our inaugural event, so we've been doing this since, well, almost 10 years now. So the superhero pub crawl is just one of the fun chances to really show off your skills and talents and bring out, it's a chance to wear your costume, your cosplay in something other than just the conventions.
Yeah, and as we know, most cosplayers are always looking for an excuse. How many people participate, do you think, every year?
We usually get between 200 to 300 people come out, and the costuming, it's up to your choice, you know. Sometimes we get cosplayers who are really experienced and well into it and create their own extravagant costumes, down to somebody just wearing a cape and having a good time. We encourage people to be creative and to do more than just a t-shirt and a cape, but it's all for a good cause, raise money for local charities.
Yeah, and I know you're the vice president of Stumptown Events, and I know you said you're raising money for Planned Parenthood with this. Tell us a little bit about your nonprofit and maybe a little bit more of an overall description of what you do.
Well, we are a 100% volunteer nonprofit event production company. We produce mostly these costume themed pub crawl events, and we're expanding into some other types of events too to raise money for local nonprofit charities. The Planned Parenthood Columbia Willamette branch is the one we're doing for this event. It's a locally Portland based nonprofit. We've also raised money for Portland Sunshine Commission and the Northwest Bartenders Association and several other great local charities too.
If someone wanted to volunteer or get in contact with you, how do they do it?
Well, we actually have a volunteer page on Facebook. It's Stumptown Volunteers. You can request to join from there, or you can send an email direct to contact@stumptownevents.org.
All righty. So StumptownEvents.org or on Facebook, it's Stumptown Volunteers. We will have that also on our social media. And one last question for you before we let you go here in our last 30 seconds. Why is the event so popular? What is unique about this that you think draws people out?
One thing is all of our events are these costume-themed events. And everybody, I love giving people a subject, not really a structured format, and letting people seeing how creative people can be and what they can bring to the event. And also it's more than just a pub crawl. We just don't go to individual clubs. We go to the fun dance clubs, and we have a rolling DJ podium, and we play music in between the events, and it's a rolling party from one place to the next.
All right, Sean. Well,
it is a lot of fun.
It sounds like it. I'm going to be there.
Stumptown SuperCon, July 27th, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock starting time at Kells. Check out our social media for more details. Sean, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you.
We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Send us your questions. That's how we do our programming. We're on social media, One User Friendly on Facebook, One User Friendly on Twitter. Or did you miss a show? Well, don't do that. It's 5 to 6 on Saturday evening. There's nothing else to do on Saturday night. But if you happen to have missed it, our podcast is available at theanswerportland.com anytime. And if you're out of the local area, you can stream the show anytime at the same site. Want to look at our archives? Userfriendlyshow.com has all of them. Joining me today is Eric G. from Around the House.
Thanks,
Welcome
buddy.
Back.
Thanks, man. Happy to be back. It's nice to have this little role reversal here that we do.
It is. It is kind of cool, isn't it? It's a little bit weird, too, but yeah. I love it.
It's good.
So let's talk about, we've been talking about smart homes and some of the technologies and security and that type of a thing, and you had brought up solar-powered cameras.
Yep.
So let's talk about energy consumption in the modern age a little bit. What are you seeing with that?
Man, I tell you what, I think my house right now, my energy consumption is up because I've got so many little different things running around the house that maybe I didn't have. You know, I've got switches for this. I've got, you know, those things add up,
yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, it's not a lot of power, I don't think, but it's funny. You know, it's like my Nest thermostat I know uses a lot more power than the old junky one I had on beforehand. Right. And I think all those little technology upgrades do add a little bit to the house. And again, add a little more heat to it as well.
Yep. And it seems like you would have to deal with all that kind of stuff. Now, are you seeing a lot of use of alternative energy, solar, that type of thing? We hear about it.
Oh, I use it on like my Nest camera. Great example. I love that thing. It sits up in the front of the house. I've got it aimed up at the sky. I've got it so it's happy all year round, which is kind of the hard part. You know, before I was struggling with some of the solar things because it's a small little panel. And it used to be I'd have to get up on the roof and go change that thing, you know, in January.
Yeah, it's
to
always
get
fun.
The best,
yeah.
To get the best, I'm like, ooh, battery's getting low. I better twist that over. But I found a happy spot after a few seasons. But that's some of those things, especially when I don't have to run 110 power up someplace. It's nice to use those little solar panels for that.
And it seems like the swap outs of these things is always when it's snowing or when it's cold or where it's impossible to get to them. I don't know why.
Why is that? It's Murphy's Law, you know?
You know, on a good day that it would be convenient to do it, it works perfectly. No sign of a problem.
It's that sun, you know, it's like the day 7 of rain.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's not working. But hey, I like it because it actually, the way I've got it set up now, it goes into my neighbor's yard, to my other neighbor's yard, and goes across the street. I can see just about anything there.
Oh, that's good to know. Don't live next door to Eric. Okay.
Oh, now, yeah.
Unless you want to be on camera.
Yeah, if you're mowing that corner of your yard, I can see you.
Yeah, there you are. You know, that's interesting, too, although there's a lot worse out there, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that's coming from my house, so it's just seeing the corner there for a yard. So.
Now, do you think these rooftop solar installations and these type of things are ready for prime time? I mean, are we seeing them actually work, or is it still a supplemental thing?
It's working. It's doing it out there. I think the biggest problems that I'm seeing out there with people are the ones that are leasing the systems. They're having them installed. And the lease payments of how that works versus how the energy usage and the energy they're getting out of it, I'm seeing some people get into pretty bad deals and it's costing them to use solar. And the company that's doing it on the lease payment is making the money off of them and they're not.
So that's what you want to watch for, the numbers on these things, definitely. While it's good to use green energy, make sure you're doing it in the right way.
You don't want to be paying somebody to make money off of you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Another topic we hear about a lot is healthy homes.
It's huge.
So first tell us what that is and what you're seeing for implementation of that.
You think about it, 30 years ago, they weren't doing any of the house wraps and any of the really stuff that made a tight home. And so there was planned air that came through the house. If you think about it, it would grab air out of the basement crawl space. It would come up around the windows and doors. It would come in. It would go up through the ceiling area up there. And then when you had that 1970s shake roof that was fairly open to the element, you had this really drafty house that always had semi-fresh air in it. So what happens when you tighten it all up? You have now trapped all those contaminants that we've created or drug into the home. We've left it all right inside. So you get mold issues. You get even more radon issues because you're trapping that stuff inside the home. So healthy homes are getting huge. I had a guest on my show a few weeks ago, America's Healthy Home Expert. She said that she can go and do a lab test of an air sample inside your home and tell you how many containers of sanitizing wipes that you have open in your home.
Oh my goodness.
That's how bad. And
that's
then
incredible.
She can also tell you that how many of the Glade style plug-in air fresheners you have, because if you think about it, inside a nice tight home, you're just vaping that air freshener inside the house. So again, things that you can buy at the store that might not be healthy for your home.
Yeah, it sounds like it, all of these things getting trapped. So what do you do about it?
Ventilation is key. You know, I really like putting in great vent fans for bathrooms. Those need to run for 20 minutes. So if you go in there, Panasonic's a great brand. I don't have anything to do with them. They don't pay me to say it, but they have humidity controlled sensors. So you can leave it technically on. It will turn off and on as you need it, which is great. But one of the things that people forget about when they're doing stuff is if you've put in that chef's kitchen with that 1200 CFM awesome vent fan, you got to create makeup air. So you got to create a system that your HVAC system knows that you've turned that on to put fresh air in, because the danger is with these new appliances is that you can suck carbon monoxide back through your furnace or water heater into your home. And now you're gassing yourself out, which is never a healthy deal.
Yeah, no, that sounds like a use for smart home though. So you could coordinate the two appliances.
Correct. And that's where you're starting to see that smart home technology dive in there now. And a lot of the thermostats and stuff are designed for that now, but it's one of those things that it's with the tighter homes, you really got to pay attention to. And the most important thing, stay on top of those molds, because that's going to be an expensive fix if you're not getting that ventilation right.
Question that we've had from some listeners too, it has to do with off-gassing for modern things that are used within the home. What is off-gassing, and would this also be something to be fixed with ventilation?
Yeah, it's always fixed with ventilation. Well, off-gassing is like, if you think of new car smell, that's off-gassing.
Okay.
You know.
But I like a new car smell.
I do. But you're just smelling all the new car chemicals. And the same thing, you can get a new piece of furniture. Some of the biggest problems you're getting out there is some of the bamboos, especially if you go into some of the discount places. How they create bamboo is they cut it down, and a lot of the uncertified bamboo floorings, for instance, are getting cut in Southeast Asia. They have big pits that they have dug openings in, and they fill them up with formaldehyde. They use it to kill the black mold that you see on bamboo if it's out naturally, and they actually take care of it. So that's one of the things you got to watch out for. Formaldehyde's a big one in off-gassing and building materials.
We've got about a minute left here, and one of the other topics you brought up that I think would be really something interesting is the use of virtual reality in home design.
I am teaching classes now across the country on designing kitchens and baths in virtual reality, so you can see it in VR as it's designed, and you can pick out the colors and stuff and then experience it without it seeing built. It's a huge thing that you're seeing now, and it's rolling across the country, so you're doing pretty good on virtual reality now, and I think you're going to see a lot more of it in the future. It's the new way design is going.
This is User Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is the User-Friendly 2.0 Clip Show. So I sense a bit of a reoccurring theme from the last year, and I think it's that we like things like Comic-Con and technology shows.
Wow, that's just a real shocker.
I know. It's a real stretch. It really is. So I'm going to put you both on the spot. Gretchen, let's start with you. What is your favorite event that we did this year?
I don't know. That's kind of a tough one. I really liked Emerald City.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. Emerald City, it was the first one. It was kind of it wasn't the first one, but it was the first one we did as 2.0. And it was really a neat event, I think. We're going back this year, so it's going to be a lot of fun to see that again. But what I liked about that one is that they had so much in there that was designed for the community, raise money for the children's hospital, things like that, that where you could go out and have fun and actually contribute and give back a little bit too.
Yeah, it was really neat. And it was so spread out inside the hotel and then in the hotels downtown and around the corner. And
there was just like layers upon layers of different areas to explore. I know that we didn't get to see all of it.
No, we didn't.
No. And that was with a full convention center and a couple of the hotels around there. And Seattle does not have a small convention center.
No.
It's multiple floors and all the rest of it. So it was good. Now, my favorite tech show of the year, I think, was the Google Next.
Yeah, that was pretty fun.
You know, it seemed like there was a lot of information. Now, I know from my own standpoint as a developer, I probably got a little more out of it, but we all got a lot of swag and we all got a lightsaber.
Yeah, lightsabers at a tech show. Where can you go wrong?
Yeah, really, really. I mean, it was kind of interesting. The one thing we couldn't find at that show, and we didn't talk about it when we reviewed the show, but it created for a problem, is that they didn't have available bags. So we're walking around the floor, which is pretty big here, and we're in a situation where we're carrying all this stuff people are giving us, and there's we're running out of room. It'd be like going to the grocery store and not having a shopping cart and needing to get about 40 or 50 items.
Yeah.
So what I would save the swag out of all of that, if I had to pick something out, I think it's the Android flash drive that they gave me. You guys remember what you even got?
Yeah, I got the Android flash dude that was, he was an upper class guy with a monocle in a tuxedo.
That's and cool. I was supposed to get the Android kitty.
Yes.
And they gave me something else. I was disappointed. I really wanted the kitty.
Well, and then another thing that wasn't talked about is I managed to get it and then promptly lost it. So hopefully I'll find it pretty soon. It's around here somewhere in our studio. But
I love the kitty. It was so cute.
I was surprised mine had a flash drive in it, but I've never used it.
Yours was one of the few ones that had a flash drive.
Yeah.
So, well, this next year we're going to have a few new Comic Cons that we haven't covered. And a couple more tech shows and some more news and information and all of the stuff that you've gotten used to listening here. News of the weeks and those type of things. And in the meantime, check out our podcast, theanswerportland.com. Also now on radio.com or on social media at One User Friendly. This is User Friendly 2.0, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
User Friendly 2.0 is copyright 2019 User Friendly Media Group, Inc. The views and opinions expressed in this show are those of the host and not necessarily User Friendly Media Group, Inc. or the station. Music licensing by BMI. Hosting provided by WeAreTechnology.com. Podcast available at TheAnswerPortland.com or UserFriendlyShow.com.